Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We are on episode number
119.
And it is our first one in 2025.
Oh, wow.
Happy New Year.
It's like February, bro.
I know. It's also been a weird year so far, so I don't know. But, you know, it's still nice to be back here.
We did take a two-month break because we are unpaid interns at this podcast.
That's not the reason why. It's actually because Shama wanted to go on a long vacation.
I went on a... Okay, so...
Where'd you go?
Okay, so I went to India for my cousin's wedding, and that was really cool. And then I went to Nepal. I did an Ayurvedic detox called Panchakarma.
Nice.
If anybody knows what that is, they know how ridiculous that is.
It's amazing.
They basically put oil in oil in different parts of your body. all of your orifices are filled with oil.
Okay.
And you get a lot of enemas.
Happy
New Year!
So much more to it. Please look up Panchakarma.
It's actually really great. I'm not doing it justice at all, but there is a lot of oil.
Okay.
In all
That's
parts
great.
Of your body.
Hey, what's your name? What are our names?
Oh, my name is Priyadarshini.
My name is Enema. I just wanted to say Enema one more time. Anyways, my name is Shama Sagita.
And I am Shamali, and we're so happy to be back. You know, February can be the official start of the year. January was crazy for the world.
January was
like
a whole year.
It really was.
Own,
so. I love how 3 weeks into January, everyone had reached their limits already.
Yeah.
It's been a crazy, we're healthy. We're doing okay. And we're reading the Bhagavad Gita again with all of you, so we're just really happy to be here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we had started chapter 15, right? Previously.
Oh, yeah. Yes, we did.
All right, that's true.
I forgot what we were doing here.
We're just like,
and then I went here, and then I went here.
Now a podcast about where Shama Sangeeta has traveled, and all the oils
and all the orifices.
Orifices is a great word.
It really is.
We should move on.
Okay, we're moving on.
Okay, we're on chapter 15, text 5, and Shamali.
Yes.
What do we learn so far?
So basically, chapter 15 details this beautiful analogy of a banyan tree, and basically the banyan tree it represents the material world, and it demonstrates that it is complicated navigating the material world. The roots are growing downward, the branches upward. And Prabhupada says the thing is, we don't need to try to figure it all out, but we really need to understand that this tree, where it begins and where it ends, we want to get out. We have to understand what our goal is. So we want to understand the basic principle of attachment and how deeply rooted it is. So basically, we left off on texts 3 and 4, and it almost says like a cool, like we like to put things into formulas. So it says, with steady determination, we must cut down the strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Mm-hmm. So step one, we need to achieve detachment, but that's really hard and it takes time. It's a gradual process. But step two is, it's not just enough to be detached. We must seek that place, Krishna says, from which having gone, one never returns.
Mm.
Where are we talking about?
Back to Godhead.
Yeah, back to Godhead.
Yes. That's, what she said.
Yeah.
But also, when it comes to the detachment part, I think we're going to get more into it in text 5 and everything, because it's not detachment from everything. This whole book started with Arjuna saying, I don't want to be a part of this. I want to go to the forest and do my own thing and be detached and just kind of, avoid this big conflict. And that's just not the reality that any of us are faced. The conflict is here, and there are things to be detached from, but it's not...
Absolutely.
So what do we figure out?
A way to avoid, right?
Yeah, so we need to figure out in this chapter, what is important to detach from?
Exactly.
Yes. Because I'm avoiding attachment like Arjuna at the beginning of this book, where he was just like, no, thanks, bro. Yeah. I'm going to go to the mountains. Bye-bye. Right? And so avoid an attachment. Not a good type of attachment.
Right. Because detachment itself is not enough. We have to become attached to something higher. Because if we just become detached, we're going to be in a limbo of, okay, then what? So then once we seek that place, Goloka Vrindavan, the spiritual realm, then we need to surrender to the Supreme. So it's kind of like a three-step process. And the first time we spoke about text 3 and 4, I didn't quite realize it. But Priya, you said a good point about detachment isn't enough, because it almost delineates two paths that you can take. And one is through Jnana Yoga and one is through Bhakti Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Because Prabhupada says, at one point he says, finally, in this way, when we reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is the end of research work. So there he was talking about the path of Jnana Yoga, the path of knowledge, starts with, we first try to surrender, then become detached, then we replace Oh, no, sorry. I'm reading the Bhakti Yoga one. Rewind what I just said. Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So the path of gyan is first we try to understand the material world, right. Then become detached, then seek the destination of the spiritual world, and then surrender. So surrender almost comes last, and it's just a longer and harder process. And like you said, Priya, detachment is not the main thing we're striving for, because in bhakti, step one, we first surrender. We don't go through this long path, because if we first surrender, then Krishna helps us become detached, because it's a reciprocal process. And then we replace the material for the spiritual, and he takes us to that point of liberation. So those are the two paths.
I mean, it makes sense. It's like any relationship, right? Like you can get, if you look at jnana and you think jnana yoga. You can think of it as like you get invested in any kind of subject and you get really interested and you learn a lot. And then through that, you know, you develop a lot of knowledge. You meet people that are like-minded. You know, like that's a process that guides you to an end goal too, but it's a lengthy process. Whereas when we're talking about bhakti yoga, the first thing is you're developing attachment for Krishna.
Yeah.
And just like if you're part of a relationship, when you start becoming attached to a person, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain qualities and characteristics that you develop along the way to maintain that relationship. And there's certain habits and things that we get rid of because we realize they're not as helpful in that process.
Right.
So bhakti yoga is basically the same thing. We're saying, how do I get attached to Krishna? And in that process, I will shed all of these bad qualities I might have, all of these anarthas, all of these, you know, difficult things that have been not helping me in this process of this many lifetimes. So,
right. I see the two different paths as, have you heard before the comparison of, they say the material world is like the hoof of a calf, that when we surrender to Krishna, he almost like helps us traverse what's something that can be so vast and entangling and expansive. We can traverse it as if it was just a small thing, versus if we go through the path of jnana yoga, we're trying to first observe and analyze the world and then reach the stage finally of surrender. That's like on our own swimming across this vast ocean that's just very long and very difficult. But Krishna can shorten the process and give us the tools we need if we first surrender, rather than that coming as the last step of the process.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Krishna has been fair to say, like, these processes lead to me.
Yeah.
So if you need to take the long route, you know, you do that. But like, I don't advise it.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and that's just a choice. And I think it's a choice based on our desires, who we are, what we want, you know, like the attachments we have in this lifetime. All of these things play a role in what path we choose at the end of the day.
Right.
And the choices we make can change us out of that path, but it is still a choice.
And we could switch paths, right? Depending on the knowledge and where we are in our just like intellectual journey, you know, there might be some paths that you're like, oh, I think I need to take this path. And then when you see a shortcut, you're like, okay, I think I'm ready for this now. So you're allowed to switch paths.
Totally.
Right.
Realization comes in different stages of people's lives. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's
totally
when it's meant to be.
Yep.
Just keep swimming.
Just keep swimming. All right. The invocation, please, ladies.
Wow, that was just a recap.
That was just a recap.
All right.
And that's all the time we have at this episode.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Nice. Good job. 2025, ladies. Okay. All right. Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. All right. Chapter 15, text number 5, Priyadarshini.
Oh, yeah. I literally was like expecting you to read for some reason. It's been quite a few months
haven't done this. Do you want me to talk more about Panchakarma?
No, no. Okay, I will start reading. And not because I don't think Panchakarma is amazing, but I just think, you know.
The way I describe it is not really appetizing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, continue.
Anyways, text 5. Those who are free. Whoop. Let me figure out who's speaking real quick.
Krishna
is speaking. Yeah. Okay. So Krishna is saying, those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Personality, attain to the eternal kingdom.
Mm. All right, one more time?
Yes. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender to the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom.
Mm. Ooh, okay. Can we do this one line at a time?
Yes. Okay. So those who are free from false prestige. So we talked about this earlier.
This this need for admiration.
Yes. Yeah. Pride.
Right. Because Prabhupada says the first qualification in the surrender process is that one shouldn't be deluded by pride.
Right. Yeah. In what ways does this come about? I feel like when we think about pride and prestige, we often think of like high personalities, maybe people who've acquired a lot of money and they feel very high and mighty, or people who've acquired high positions, and whether political or social standings or whatever.
Right.
But I think it actually can be anyone and anything. Like it can be an older sibling and they think, oh, I'm in charge and I get to say what it is. It can be a parent who is on a power trip thinking, it's my way or the highway. It can be, you know, like pride can be something that affects any of us that we can allow to be a quality that overtakes us. Yeah.
It could even be someone on a spiritual path that thinks I'm doing so good, like, and looks down upon others who maybe are struggling.
Right.
This whole line, this whole first line, those who are free from false prestige, illusion, and false association, is literally like fake status, fake things, fake people, right? Mm-hmm. It's like all of these things.
Ooh,
that like,
I like that. Say right? it again.
Fake status, fake things, fake people. Mm. Those who are free from all of those things, right?
And
society teaches us to chase all of those things, right? The position, the cars, the money, all of that stuff, and like surround yourself with like all of these people. But like all of this stuff is like not really what we're meant to be doing here. All of these things, it's literally like fake things, fake position, fake people.
Yeah, wow. Buying into the illusion.
Yeah, and a lot of this also, like, I think when it says false association, in one hand, we can think about, you know, people who are duplicitous or you know, whatever, have bad qualities. But we also, I think Prabhupada and Krishna are also talking more in a transcendental way also, where it's about people who are false association, meaning they're not good for a spiritual journey.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So if we think about it in that spiritual perspective, but yeah, I really liked what you said. That was really well said.
Okay. So those who are free from all of these things, which is difficult.
Yes.
Because, you know, Maya doesn't take a day off. Okay. Maya does not take a day off. Go ahead.
Who understand the eternal.
That's Krishna, right?
Yeah. Krishna, but also like just like life's purpose, right? Like eternality,
here?
Our own souls, our own purpose, just.
And all of the previously mentioned three things are all temporary, right?
Yes.
So they know that none of those things are eternal.
Right. We know that prestige, illusion, and false association are temporary. And we understand that the eternal is Krishna, our souls, and, you know, this path, this knowledge, the good association, and all the things that come with it.
Yep.
Okay. Who are done with material lust.
Yeah. In this context, material lust isn't just how we think of it, like sensual desires, but lust to lord over anything that I want to lust over with my senses,
right.
Overindulge in chocolate, whatever it might be. An overindulgence just of our senses.
And when I think of it, you know, we were watching, I don't remember the title of it, but we were watching the documentary that came out on Peacock about the Hare Krishna, New Vrindavan.
Right.
That documentary. I don't remember the title right now, but there was one clip they showed of Prabhupada in that. We only watched the first episode, but of Prabhupada, and he was in his deathbed and he was talking about lust. And it really got stuck in my mind because in that moment I could tell that what he was talking about wasn't just even the senses, but it was like desire for power.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Desire to be this, you know, ruler, this, to have prestige, to
totally,
I'm doing this. I am accomplishing this. I am the one, you know, like that kind of mindset, that lust of, I don't know. You know what I mean? I'm not sure what the perfect word to say
is. No, absolutely. Priya, he says, actually, Prabhupada in the purport says a line that exactly what you're bringing up. There's one line that I highlighted. He says, one has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of this world. And these faulty associations bind one to this material world. So what you're talking about, it's like we think we're lording it over because we're the proprietor. But if you think back to in chapter 5, 5.29, that was the peace formula. Krishna says that he is the proprietor of all planets. So we falsely assume that it's up to us to to lord over this. I am the powerful one.
Right. Yeah. And in so many ways, like I think about this all the time. I you know, you guys are very lovely and you give me a lot of credit for this podcast, but it was Krishna, like that inspiration to do something like this, to keep me connected. That's Krishna's, you know, and the fact that we're all doing this, it's also Krishna's arrangement. Like we have so many things we could be doing. And the fact that we're here, it's inspiration and push from him. Like we can say like, oh, we are the Modern Yogi podcast and we're doing this and we're doing that. But realistically speaking, it's just Krishna inspiring everyone. He is this. And, you know, I don't know, like, but it is so easy to be like, well, yeah, I created the Modern Yogi podcast, or like it's happening because it was my idea. But I just like, what would be the point of that? And that is a slippery slope into just not understanding our true identity.
Yeah.
Which gets us further away from Krishna.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think what's crazy is that who are done with material lust is such a big thing to ask for, because I think that like we all crave little things,
something
for something, right? Yeah, whether it is a little bit of pride validation, or I mean, we all need validation, but like, it does it come from the right source? And when I read this verse, it reminded me of like therapy and trauma, right? Where it's like, if we are not self-aware enough, we don't know what we're motivated by.
Yeah.
Right. And sometimes, and a lot of times it comes from how we grew up and our parents. Like if our parents loved us too much, then that brings us something, some sort of trauma. If our parents didn't love us enough, it brings us some sort of trauma. And so we spend our entire life chasing things that messed us up when we were kids. And so we need to be self-aware enough, and we need to do our own healing enough to not chase after things. Because the more that we chase after, whether it's love or validation or all of these other things, or money or like some sort of respect and status in society, the more that we chase after all of these things, the more we're going to end up at back at like zero, right? Because all of these things are super temporary. So that's what this reminded me of, actually.
Yeah. Mm. There's this, I recently saw this post by Mahatma Das Prabhu. Yeah. Like, I never know how to address it. And he wrote, it's a mistake to think that all impurities will automatically go away by the power of bhakti. Mm-hmm. Rather, bhakti gives us the power to both see and deal with our impurities. Mm-hmm. So they're there. To pretend like we don't have material lust is also just not useful.
It's laughable.
Basically, laughable. It really is. It's the self-awareness to know what those are and learn how to navigate, right? Mm-hmm. Those desires we might have.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I think it is important for us, in addition to bhakti, in addition to what you just said, right? In addition to trying to form a relationship with Krishna, we also need to be self-aware and do our own healing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because, yeah, our karma, we can't remember what we did in the past. But then we just got into these bodies and we're little babies and we grew up and we had all of this different interaction with different family members and all that stuff. But I think it's up to us to do our healing as well, because otherwise we'll still be chasing all these little things.
Yeah.
To all make up material for something. Things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in line with the banyan tree example and talking about becoming free from all these things, which really limit us, we can't end the tree of material existence, but we can end our entanglement with the tree. And I heard a beautiful analogy that it said, just like a prisoner can't destroy the prison, but with, you know, correct behavior, they can end their own sentence. So similarly, we can work on through self-awareness and doing the internal work and healing and bhakti. It's a whole formula that we can try to cut the shackles that really root us to this material world and end our own sentence here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another line that I loved in the purport is like, for one who is always expecting some sort of honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. And it's like, if you're always expecting like someone to say good job or get a good status or get the money or get something, then you're never going to be able to fully devote yourself to a pure relationship with Krishna.
Wow. Wait, read that one more time.
For one who is always expecting some honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. Right?
All of this is like so fascinating. It's just really making me think about, okay, I don't, sometimes you know how you have thoughts and you have to filter them. Yes.
All the time.
All the time.
I am well aware.
just, you know, as a person who's grown up in this movement, I see so many different types of people who have so many ebbs and flows of different aspects of bhakti in their lives. And I think sometimes it's just, we get so caught up in like what the right thing to do. Krishna says to do this. Krishna says to do that. Krishna right. says to do this, 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 and that. And that's the way I will be perfect. And that's the way I will be a good devotee. And that's the way I will accomplish all these things. But really it is the part that ends up being missing is the self-awareness mm-hmm. and the just authenticity of what the relationship is supposed to be. Yeah. Right? Like, it's just supposed to be whether you see Krishna as your friend, as your father, or as your son, that relationship to wherever you can be.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always thought it was so interesting that one of the fundamental books of our philosophy is The Science of Self-Realization.
Mm.
And obviously it's the self-realization that we are not this body and we are the soul, but there's also that sense of in this material world, we all have to do the work of self-realization of, okay, I'm not the body. I'm the soul, but in this body, who am I? What am I doing? How do I treat others? How do I navigate in this world? What are my values? What are my morals? Like all of that makes a difference in how you even approach Krishna consciousness. Because if we're just all about the rules and we don't work on our internal self, then how we're showing up to the world isn't our best.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make
that's
sense?
Real. Yeah.
Yeah.
That work, that inner work needs to happen too. And I think that's what Mahatma Prabhu was saying with his quote. And that's what I sometimes see. People are like, well, I chant all my 16 rounds and I read the Bhagavad Gita and I do this, but then I kind of treat this person poorly, but they deserve it. And it's like, where is the, you know, the, or like, oh, I'm a little racist, but like, that's okay because, yeah. you know, I love Krishna. And it's like, well, yes, mm-hmm. but, oh, Krishna, you know, we got to work on the inside.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. There's so many people like that. And it's us included, you know what I mean? Where it's like, we're really trying to cultivate a real pure relationship with Krishna, but there's also so much other work that we still need to be doing as human beings in order to get to the level of the divine qualities that Krishna is looking for.
Yep.
Yep.
So, oof.
All right, going back to the verse. So who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress.
That's for sages in my mind. Yeah. Just, you know, like being completely okay with what's good. I mean, we have that saying, right? Good, bad, who's to say? That's something that Shyamali brought up so many years ago now.
It's like a lifetime ago.
I know. And it's really something to try to strive for, but it's definitely hard, right? When things get tough, it's hard not to see and get caught up in the tough. And when things are really great, it's hard to not get caught up in all the great.
But it is a muscle that we can
practice,
right?
Yeah. Or exercise.
Exercise, right? Yeah. It is definitely a muscle. Like when good things are happening to you, like learning how to be calm and breathe through it. And when bad things are happening, learning how to be calm and breathe through it. That is definitely a muscle that we can all develop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Prabhupada says the more, he's kind of saying in the purport, the more and more we identify with this material realm and we really buy into the illusion, the more we complicate things. And then we're always kind of in trouble and troubled by it because we have no notion of the other reality, which when we do remember that other reality more, it makes this reality feel lighter. So then we can a little more, okay, it gives us more space to breathe, to try to calm down and handle the things that are coming in this reality, knowing that there's another reality there. We don't get so consumed here, so lost. Like it feels lighter and then we try our best to navigate through it.
Yeah. I always think about the difficulty of when you guys been to India, but maybe I'm sure you've also been to other rural areas where like life is slower and more peaceful. And like you, honestly, your life is so different. And if you're a practicing devotee, everything is just, I don't know, maybe I'm being idealistic because that is not the life I lead, but it feels more wholesome in the sense that you have more of an opportunity to do that, right? To focus really on this higher perspective, on this spiritual knowledge, on this. How did I start this? I lost my train of thought.
You were in a small town in India.
It makes me jealous of sometimes of that idea because it is true. Prabhupada says we overcomplicate things. And it's true. Like that person who's living in India or who's living in a farm somewhere, who's living a simple life, just, you know, doing, they're not entangled in all the things that somebody else maybe is like a very, you know, busy professional or like someone who lives in a city with so much hustle and bustle. Like there's just so much more to get swept up and carried away by, you know, sometimes I'm just like jealous of that, that slow, peaceful, like simple living, high thinking life.
But it's also perspective too, right? Like I think I would go crazy in that small farm life. Given the place where I am now, just knowing I'm more of a mode of passion type of person. And like, I think I would go insane just like trying to be on a farm. I think I could do it, but I think I want to say it's like the later in my life type of thing where I'd be able to handle that.
Yeah.
And I think it's important for the people that do live in the city to find moments of stillness, right?
I think it's the greatest challenge in a good way to be in this very hectic world and still find the peace.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's like a really good muscle. Mm-hmm. What did we say? Exercise.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, just really quick. I was literally talking to my neighbor the other day and she was like, she moved from Toledo to Los Angeles.
What is Toledo?
Ohio. Okay. Yeah, I had to look that up too. anyway, she moved to Los Angeles and she's like, I actually find peace here. Mm. And I was like, nobody says that when they move to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
She's like, my whole life I've been chasing happiness and all of these material things. She's like, comes from a very affluent like family. And she's like, she let it all go and moved to LA. And she's like, I feel the lightest and the happiest I've ever been by just letting everything go. And I'm not chasing happiness anymore. I'm chasing peace.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then I brought up Krishna. I was like, literally Krishna says in the Gita, like there is no happiness without peace actually. Mm. And that's what we're trying to chase here is the peace. You know?
Beautiful. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I just thought what both of you have been saying, it popped into my head, a silly example from a TV show. It's short if I can say it, just about how being aware of a higher reality or something more meaningful makes what you're going through lighter. So have you heard of the show Suits? You know, So I was watching just an episode last night where one of the lawyers, he's kind of like Lewis Litt. If you've seen the show, he's always striving for like being the big dog in the law firm. But anyway, so the two top lawyers there, they were arguing about who wanted to become managing partner. And they're so consumed by their argument that they don't realize they're destroying the rest of the firm. And then Lewis Litt steps up and he's able to solve the whole thing, which is very unlike him, and they make him managing partner. And then later on, he's talking to someone and they're kind of like, how did you do it? And he's like, you know, now that I'm about to become a dad and that's where my focus is going, it just became so simple, the road to how to solve this, because I didn't even want it anymore. Mm. And that was the first time he let go. Wow. And I just thought of the Gita in that moment and that little silly example that I thought for him, it was being a dad, which was a higher purpose. Yeah. But when we're aware of the higher reality, all of a sudden the road in the material realm becomes more clear, because when we're buying into it so much, our ego, our pride, all these things are latched on so tightly. But the second we think, okay, there is another realm, then things become more clear how to navigate in this realm, because we're a little... We need that detachment. We're attached, but we need to be detached at the same time.
Oh yeah.
I love when you said the character is like, I didn't even want it anymore.
Yeah.
And it's when we have that higher purpose, or we have some sort of like debilitating health condition or something that happens that is just like so much bigger than all of our tiny little material lusty things.
Yeah.
Then we're like, I don't even want it anymore.
Yeah. You
know? Perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so real.
That's a really cool example.
Hmm. TV shows for the win. I heard someone break down chapter 15 and they were saying the first five verses describe the process of freeing oneself from the weakness of the heart and how to let go. And then the rest of the chapter discusses Purushottama Yoga, which is the yoga of the Supreme Lord. So starting from text 6 to the end, we'll talk more about different aspects of the Supreme Lord. But these first five were about freeing oneself.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Anything else before we move on?
Text 6? Let's do it.
All right. Shama Sangeeta. Oh.
She's like, I'm ready to move on.
Self-advocating.
Chapter 15, text number 6. Krishna is speaking. That supreme abode of mine is not illuminated by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world.
Hmm.
Wow.
Sounds great to me.
I know.
Sign me up.
Well, weren't we already there?
Well, I guess so. That's entering a whole other can of worms.
I know. Maybe let's just tackle this verse for now.
Yeah.
So he's saying his house is not powered by the sun or the moon or fire or the Los Angeles Electric Department. Or like there's nothing that illuminates it. Right. Besides Krishna himself?
Yes. He's saying he's the source of everything in a different way.
Nice. Mm-hmm. That's perfect. Amazing. And those who reach his house never come back down to this crappy house.
Yeah.
Okay. And a self-illuminating planet might sound kind of far-fetched, but we do have one in this universe, The sun, it's self-luminous. Oh. But in the spiritual realm, all of the spiritual sky is self-luminous.
This is very interesting.
But they're not burning and you can actually live on them.
They're very nice. They're lovely.
Very nice.
Very nice.
So we can live at Krishna's house and it won't burn us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got it. Nice.
It's luminous like our sun, but not burning like our sun.
Nice. Okay, cool. All right. Any fun parts of this purport, ladies?
Any fun parts of this purport?
It says that the effulgence, so like this light that emanates from these planets, it's actually emanating from the planet of Krishna, Goloka Vrindavan. So like all the light is because of Krishna and it just goes through for all the planets. Other than this, the major portion of that shining sky is full of spiritual planets, which are called Vaikunthas, chief of which is Goloka Vrindavan. So Vaikuntha planets are all these planets, and then Goloka Vrindavan is the greatest of these planets, is the chief.
So we're trying to head towards destination Goloka Vrindavan.
Yeah. No pit stops.
Okay, cool.
Ideally.
What is interesting about this verse is that it gives me a sense of security, because that last line is like, those who reach it never return to this material world, where it's like, yeah. I don't think if we get there, if we make a mistake, we don't come back. You know, this is not like a you one strike and you're out type of policy in Goloka Vrindavan. Once you're there, you've made it. And so that gives me a little bit of hope that like, okay, I think this is a place that I could stay for a really long time. No one's gonna kick me out.
Yeah. I mean, I can think about it from that perspective, and then my dark brain also goes to other perspectives. But if I think about it from your perspective, I see like, you know, I saw a clip the other day where there was this man who's a medium. So they talk to the dead, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, through all the years of talking to the dead and trying to understand this existence, the one thing I still cannot understand is why we have pain. Like this idea of pain, right? And like, I was like, oh, I know the answer, you know? And he was kind of like, yeah, like why do bad things happen to good people? Like that was something that he's like, I still don't really understand that after all these years.
Wow.
Right? And so like, I think for us thinking about that, there is a Goloka Vrindavan where there is no suffering, there is no pain, there is no sickness, there is no death, rebirth. There's no even like this idea of you have a loved one that you will never see again, right? Because that's a lot of pain for so many people. So that is a beautiful, beautiful thought process for sure.
Wow. Yeah.
I love that you like heard his question and you're like, I wonder why there's no, why is there suffering? And you're like, I know, easy.
Yeah. I mean, imagine to not have a philosophy that answers these basic questions like that, right?
Yep.
And you know, it made me think about another time in my life. I was much younger and my cousin was in the beginning stages of becoming an atheist.
Oh, wow.
And interesting.
I don't think he is one per se.
Right.
I feel like he's maybe more agnostic. Yeah, you know,
True. It's a gray area.
It's just more about, you know, I think people who experience a lot of difficulty within religion and just all these things just feel a sense of, I don't want to be a part of any of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Anyways, and he said that same thing and he is a doctor. And so like, and he always knew he wanted to be a doctor. He said, why do children have to die? Like, I don't understand that. And at that time, I didn't have the capacity, the vocabulary to explain it in a clear way. And I just felt defeated in that moment because I knew that there was an answer and I couldn't answer it. So like, it was kind of like a full circle moment of hearing someone say the same thing. And it was also really interesting because growing up, that was kind of like the question the devotees put in posters to attract someone.
Like, why do children die?
Why do bad things happen to good people?
Oh, yes. Okay. That's a really morbid poster.
No.
Got it.
Yeah. Why do bad things happen to good people, right? Because that is true. Like a lot of people are struggling.
Sorry. Got it.
It's fair that you asked that question. No worries.
Why do bad things happen to good people?
Yeah. Mm. And I thought that it was just devotees' ways of like, you know, getting people to read the Bhagavad Gita. But this is a question that people actually have all the time in different circumstances. So just really fascinating.
Yeah. Any other fun bits from the purport?
I mean, if I can share, there's one I heard Keshav Swami talk about chapter 15 in this part. And we are talking about the spiritual realm. And he just read a little description of the spiritual world. And we know there's so much suffering in this material realm. And he was saying, and it just, I don't know, it made me smile and feel a sense of peace. He was saying the spiritual world is a place where every word is a song, every step is a dance. It's a place where every act is an act of love, where all water is nectar, every dream is fulfilled simply by thinking about it. But right now, we're living in this upside down reflection of the material world. And no matter what we desire, it'll never fully satisfy our hearts because we're in this upside down banyan tree, as we've been talking about throughout all of chapter 15. So no matter what we do and what we achieve, our hearts will be left feeling dissatisfied. Mm-hmm. And yeah, how much suffering is there all around us? So that's why Krishna is basically saying in this chapter, the world is temporary, full of misery. So if you are wise, what should we do? And the answer is, instead of pursuing these material dreams in this world, we should try to discover that spiritual reality and that mm-hmm. place where we're really meant to belong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a cool flex. I mean, his home
a
is
cool
not
a cool flex.
It's not illuminated by anything, but him, you know, it's a cool flex.
Cool flex. I mean, yeah. He has a lot of cool flexes.
Krishna does have a lot of cool flexes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just cool overall.
Mm. Anything else?
I think a good daily mantra could be to think about every day, what can I do today to invest in my journey to go back to that place yeah. where we don't belong or where we don't belong, where we don't return from, where we do belong.
Yeah.
What can I do today to help myself on that journey?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Prabhupada says for one who is too attached to this material world, it is very difficult to cut that attachment. But if it takes to Krishna consciousness, there's a chance of gradually becoming detached. Hmm. One has to associate himself with devotees, those who are Krishna consciousness. So it's like devotee association is the process, part of the process of getting that detachment, mm-hmm. because then you become more attached to Krishna in that way. And I think that's, you know.
Yeah. I think another line that I really liked is one cannot become detached from the attraction of the material world simply by dressing himself in saffron cloth, mm-hmm. right? Like we can't fake it. Like we can't just like put on tilak and like go to the temple and put on a sari mm-hmm. and just like fake that love, you know, and like, I'm such a detached soul. It literally, like Krishna can see through that very quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we know it deep down too, right? Mm-hmm. I think that, he's a lot smarter than we give him credit for or that I give him credit for. So I think it's just like we have to be truthful. And that requires a little bit of vulnerability sometimes when like looking inward to be like, okay, why am I doing certain things? Is it because I want everybody to see that I'm a really good devotee or should I actually work on being that good devotee? Oh, that means I need to look inside and be vulnerable with myself to see what I can clear out. Yeah. And that is tough.
Yeah. You know, okay, I'm going to give you a compliment. Get ready.
I'm going to give you
a yes, you.
Me?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm all ears.
Like, clear my schedule.
I think it's natural and it's not a judgment, but I know that it is natural to want prestige in Krishna consciousness too, to want to achieve and to do and to show and to like be this person that like goes to the temple and puts on the tilak and carries a bead bag and shows themselves to be a certain way. And I grew up around a lot of that. Mm. And I think there's always a small amount of sincerity, no matter what. But sometimes, like you said, we really have to ask ourselves, why are we doing this, right?
Yeah.
And one thing I love about you is that when I think when people first meet you,
you started chuckling and I couldn't help myself.
When people meet you, they know you're a bad devotee.
No,
but that's
No.
I'll tell you after why I love. Okay, yeah.
That's not what I was going to say. I was going to say like when you first meet, like when anyone first meets you, I don't think you lead with, I am a great devotee. This is what I do. This is what the services I do. You're taking it to a different, that's not what I was trying to say. What I mean is like, you show up as you first and that idea of like showing up as like this pure devotee isn't your mood at all.
Yeah.
And the more people get to know you, the more they're like, oh, this girl, she's doing this and she's doing this. And you don't share it because you want people to know that you're doing that. It just, once you become friends with someone, like you might just share, oh yeah, I'm doing this thing or whatever. Like she's, you know, part of this club and reading this book and doing this service and doing this. And all of the things that you're doing are genuinely because you find some, you know, desire to do that service and some happiness, and it's so genuine. Mm. And so meeting you was like, my people. Like, this is so lovely to just be authentically you and to be the kind of person that, you know, goofs around and is silly and can have just a conversation about a TV show and at the same time still care about, you know, her sadhana and things, you know, like that balance. That balance is hard. A lot of people are either super fanatical and like everything must be perfect.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so many, and I think you strike a really nice balance and you're very authentic. And I really love that about you.
I appreciate that. That's really, really sweet. Because the first thing that when I meet someone, I just want them to know I'm human. Mm-hmm. And because that's how I met the devotees. Mm-hmm. I was looking for a human person. And my mentor, Radha Bhakti, she lives in New York. She was a human person who like cussed and like did all sorts of things and like was like a real person.
Yeah.
And I was attracted to Krishna consciousness because of her authenticity. And I always wanted to be that person for other people. Just like be real. Like don't pretend to be like this like super detached person who's like, oh my God, I love, like you can love Krishna, but like, like you don't have to like be that bells
and
whistles.
And,
because like people love authenticity and vulnerability. And I think that like people can also smell inauthenticity from a mile away.
Totally.
And I think like if you're trying to attract more people to Krishna consciousness, just be real, like with your struggles, with like who you are, like what you type of music you like to listen to and what and like how you like to dress. Like because I think it's better to be authentic and true to that relationship than not.
Yeah. We're all human. And when we see somebody else being human and also trying to be a devotee, it's very attractive.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, thank you for being you and being so authentic.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for that compliment. I didn't know where that was going to go when you first started. It's like when people first start meeting you, they know you're a crappy devotee.
No, and so, not even.
I really appreciate
it. You guys didn't give me a chance to start that better.
Anything else from text number six? Because we do have to wrap up soon.
My goodness. In chapter 14, why is that? Never mind. I don't know what I'm reading.
Yeah, I think we're.
I think we covered the main parts, unless Priya, you see something else.
No, yeah, I think we covered everything.
Yeah, I like chapter 15. I think it's like it's getting a little analytical sometimes, but it's also like, interesting. That's what that's for, you know. And I think as we go through, we're gonna uncover more gems of Krishna's wisdom.
Yeah, and we'll leave it with the last sentence: the supreme abode can be achieved only by surrender and by no other means.
Mic drop.
Beautiful.
Krishna.
Well done. All right. Join us next time as we tackle chapter 15, text number 7.
Bye.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.